give a little introduction. My name is Jim Files. I'm the chair of the Department of Natural Resource Sciences at McGill. I'm co-chairing this session with Professor Donnie Smith of the Plant Science Department. Clearly, the focus that we've heard today of food security is around, as Minister Otis said, getting the right food on the table, or it's only important if we can eat it, as we heard. But as we begin to understand the food security system, and picking up from David's talk about systems thinking, as we begin to understand that systems process, we realize that food security is, it's not just about local households and local tables, and it's not just about food. The food security system encompasses a wide range of natural resources that contribute to food production, food processing, and in fact, to livelihoods, alternate livelihoods around the food production system. And we need to take those into account. And so this morning's session, we will look at land and water resources, and their policy context from a local to a international level. And we highlight this need for a broad and integrated view as we strive to deliver food security to households, and we a view that would incorporate a much broader set of resources and a much a broader policy, international policy environment. So just before I introduce my first speaker, I'll just point out that this session will run with 4 15-minute presentations. We'll hold the questions until the end, and then we'll have the panel come forward and sit up here, and you can direct your questions to them at that time. Okay. My first speaker in the session is Dr. Amit Roy of the International Fertilizer Development Center. Dr. Roy has advanced degrees in chemical engineering from the Georgia Institute of Technology, has more than 30 years' experience in international agricultural development in more than 100 countries. At the current time, he oversees over 800 international, multinational staff members in 23 countries. He was instrumental in research and development in new and modified fertilizer materials, and he is now leading the IFBC in the development of the next generation of fertilizers. He's been an invited speaker at many international research and development meetings and has played a very significant role in informing international discussions on soil fertility management and crop production. So please come forward.
Thank you very much, Jim. Good morning to all of you. I'm extremely delighted to be here this morning for more than one reason. First of all, I'm honored to be here at this very important conference. But second of all, IFDC, the International Fertilizer Development Center, this was set up in 1974 after the first World Food Conference, which was held in Rome. And the country that laid the effort to set up IFDC was Canada. Canada provided the first seed money, and it was through IDRC, the founding president of IDRC, Dr. David Hopper, who also became chair of the board, the second chair of the board, and served in that capacity for many years. So, and we have had many Canadians on our board. The current member of the executive committee of the IFDC board of directors is Margaret Catherine Carson, who was former president of CETA. One of the reasons IFDC was set up is to look at the fertilizer issues, which played a major role in the Green Revolution in the 70s. And that is the reason the Canadians, the United States, and the Australians thought that this is a technology that needs to be made available to the developing countries in the tropics, etc. So my presentation is focused on that. I'm going to talk about what has been achieved, what are the challenges, and then talk specifically about the fertilizer issues. So there are three issues that I'm going to cover. Look at fertilizer, how it has played a vital role in terms of the global food security, The second one is a new fertilizer must be developed to face new challenges and talk about the virtual fertilizer research center. Now, this is a graph of experiment that has been conducted in many universities. I want to draw your attention to the one on the right-hand corner at the bottom. It is an experiment that was done since the 1860s till now in Rothamsted in England. And the summary of all the graphs that you see is that fertilizer contributed about 40 to 60% of crop production that we have seen. And then it is no wonder that the cereal production parallels that of fertilizer consumption. Let me make one more comment here, and that is that we have seen remarkable production growth in cereal production globally. One region which has lagged behind is sub-Saharan Africa. It's a continent, as you know, which is vast. The yield is just 30% of the world average. The fertilizer consumption is 10th of the world average as well. But the total production of cereal in Africa as well as in Asia continues to grow. In Asia, it grows because of increase in yield, very little expansion of land. In Africa, yield has essentially remained constant, and all the production is coming from expansion of land. I want to then focus on the global population and food demand. We have currently about 7 billion, 6.9 billion people in the world. We're projecting 9.4, although I've got the number 9.2 on the graph there. The population growth, what we see, is going to be mainly in the urban area. That's where the population growth is going to take place, and it's going to take place mainly in developing countries. You see the graph on the left-hand side bottom, you see what is the projection is, that in the developing country, 87% of the food demand is going to come from that region, and particularly from the urban population, where the migration is taking place there. Overall, the demand of food that is projected is 70% globally, which accounts for about 1.4% increase per year, compounded every year. The number seems small, but when you compound that number, it's a huge, huge challenge. But if you break that down further, you'll see the increase in the developing country is going to be much more, particularly to provide for the urban population. So that increase is going to be very, very significant. That means the people who are going to produce the food, the smallholder farmers in developing countries, they have to have the technology to increase their productivity from the current level of 1% per year increase to nearly double that amount. So the challenge is, are there enough land? Is there the technology available that we can achieve those numbers? Currently, there are 500 million smallholder farmers in the world. What we also see that going forward, we see in terms of the smallholder farmers, that number is going to dwindle because the marginal farmers are going to go into commercial farming, and some of the smallholder farmers are also going to migrate to the cities. So the number of farms is going to decrease. So the land amount, although it's going to remain the same, the productivity has to increase very dramatically, and that is our challenge. Now let's look at the fertilizer issues. There are three important nutrients, what we call the primary nutrients that are needed for food production. Nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Now nitrogen, you know, there are three ways to fix nitrogen. One is through lightning, the legumes, and the last one is the energy. Whenever you have lightning and you have the rain, you'll see very soon that your yard is very green. That's because it gives all the nitrogen from the lightning, it fixes the nitrogen. But the one which has had tremendous impact globally is the conversion using the energy to fix the nitrogen. And it is called the Haber-Bosch process. That is the process which was developed in 1903. That's the same technology we are using today. It is also that invention which today has allowed nearly 30% of the world population to survive. Without that, there won't be enough nitrogen to feed the people. And what it involves is nitrogen is free in the air. You need energy to convert that into ammonia, which subsequently is reacted with carbon dioxide to produce urea, which is the most common fertilizer that is used. And it also has tremendous amount of challenges in terms of the efficiency of that compound. In terms of phosphate, there has been a lot of debate lately in whether there is enough phosphate in the world. Phosphate is fundamental to human survival, and it comes from phosphate rock, which is a finite resource. Phosphate rock is distributed all over the globe, but it is concentrated mostly in Africa. 60% of the world phosphate reserve is in Africa. It is ironic that a continent which is endowed with so much of resources uses the least amount of fertilizer, and I will discuss a little more on that one. I want to spend a little bit of time in terms of the phosphate availability. Over the last 2 years, there have been many articles globally which said we are running out of phosphorus. The world is going to run out of phosphate in 139 years. There was alarm bell. There are a lot of conferences that have taken place. We challenge that prediction. We have used our own data as well as data from the companies, and we see that number is not 16 billion, which was projected by the U.S. Geological Survey in 2010, but is close to 60 billion, and USGS subsequently revised their number to make it 65 billion, and you can see the resource number is very high. For any commodity, when the prices go up, the resources become reserves. So there is enough resources available in the world to last us for 400, 500, even 600 years. But having said that, let me also mention that phosphate is a finite resource. There is not any more available than what we have today. And it is also an element that doesn't disappear, it only dissipates. Every human bone is phosphate. Every cell in our body has phosphorus. 80% of the phosphorus that is mined today is used for agriculture and 20% for the industrial uses. Potash, very simple, it is mined, the impurities are removed, and it is sold at potassium chloride. Canada is the largest producer of potash. It has the largest reserve of the world here in Canada. Now, in terms of the fertilizer industry, it is a large industry. It's an industry in today's price, it's about $150 billion per year industry. In terms of the consumption, Asia dominates the consumption of fertilizer. China and India collectively accounts for 40%. Then you add China, India, and Brazil is about 50-52%. Those three countries are United States, North America, and Canada, essentially 60% of the world usage. So it is a large in terms of size, $150 billion per year. Now, it also causes a certain amount of problem. I talked about urea. Urea is the most common nitrogen fertilizer that is used, but it has a property which is the biggest concern to us. In flooded rice production in Asia, every 2 out of 3 bags that are applied are lost. It is not only economic loss, but it is also an environmental issue, it is also water pollution. Globally, we have only 50% efficiency. So that's a big challenge. Phosphorus, the big losses are 40-50% in beneficiation in addition to purification is a big issue. Micronutrients, you heard about micronutrients. I've got the graph here from India, which shows as India has increased its productivity, it now sees the deficiency of nutrients which affects the productivity of agriculture. The graph on the right-hand side is nitrogen. They keep on applying nitrogen, but the efficiency goes up. The nutrition aspect also is the health issue, and you see some of the issues related to it. Virtual Fertilizer Research Center. I want to share something which we talk about, but the industry has never been challenged. Since the Green Revolution, the seed industry has innovated. It has produced new varieties of seed to cope with the new challenges. But the fertilizer industry has remained stagnant. It has used its present product to cope with the challenges by maintaining the application rate as well as the management. So the investment in research by the industry is less than 0.1%, an industry that has $150 billion. And here you have a quotation from Norman Borlaug, who was on my board for many years. He would kind of constantly say, we need new fertilizer. So what we have is a virtual fertilizer research center that we have launched. And the idea is to connect the best minds of the world to find new products. And the reason it was done is the fertilizer that we use today was developed at the Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA. The United States government provided funding for 50 years to develop the fertilizer that we use today. Thereafter, there hasn't been any innovation. And we recognize that we cannot recreate the same model, so we have a virtual center. It is the idea is to have a fail-safe, adaptive, eco-sensitive, and economic product that will be suitable for smallholder farmers. It is a semi-autonomous unit of our institution led by a global board of advisors. The main focus is nitrogen and phosphorus, improving their efficiency, reduce the risk of failure for the smallholder farmers, deliver micronutrient which is needed, and reduce the cost. I want to share with you an example of some of the innovations that are coming together. I mentioned about urea, that you lose 2 out of 3 bags. There's a technology that has been used in Bangladesh today and been introduced in Africa as well. It involves essentially taking urea, forming a large granule, putting it below the surface of the soil between 4 rice plants, and the results are dramatic. In Bangladesh, they are able to reduce the urea consumption by 40%, yet they are able to produce 20% more rice. 2 million hectares of land is under this cultivation, and the government last week have decided to take it all over the country. We are also having the same type of response in Africa as well. Now, I want to leave you with the feeling that this is an example of one technology. There are many other technologies which have similar type of results, so we have to look at how to improve the efficiency of the fertilizer. And that brings it to the last slide, that fertilizer is and will remain a very key ingredient to global food security. So investing in new generation of fertilizers, which will improve efficiency and productivity of agriculture, while conserving natural resources and protecting our environment. Thank you very much.